I keep getting asked this, and I think I keep saying I wrote an entire novel, so I didn't have to answer that question.
Marginalia.
Notes in the margin of a book.
Notes, commentary, and similar material written in the margin of a book.
Comments and notes,
which are incidental or additional to the main topic
in the margin of a book.
Author Katie Williams has three books under her publishing belt, two books written for young adults, and now one that falls into the general fiction category. But don't get me wrong, there is nothing general about it. Tell the Machine Goodnight is slightly futuristic, but I'd hesitate to categorize it as science fiction. The characters, too, fight generalization. Their voices are unique, and so are their experiences. The character development, the dialogue, the writing, well, everything works. I recently caught up with Katie Williams via Skype to talk about Tell the Machine Goodnight. I'm Beth Golay, this is Marginalia, and here's our conversation. The title of your book is Tell the Machine Goodnight, and the machine is a hardware/software combination that analyzes a subject's DNA and suggests three things that will make that person happy. Now, the novel is futuristic, but it's a foreseeable future, 2035, right?
That's right.
Can you tell me a little bit about how this machine works and, you know, the circumstances that it even exists in the society? Or maybe like the setting, because this is West Coast, right?
Yes. So the novel takes place in San Francisco, which is the center of the tech world right now. And the book doesn't really get into the mechanics of how the technology works. It's more from the perspective of the different people using it, which is, I think, how we experience a lot of our technology. We have these apps and these devices we use every day. And we aren't necessarily aware of how all the mechanics work, how the coding works, but we experience them very emotionally. They're parts of our daily lives. So yeah, this was something I could imagine people wanting, and I could imagine existing about two or three steps out from where we are now. We rely on technology to do so many things, large and small, in our lives. And so why not have it address one of the largest questions, which is life satisfaction or life happiness? I mean, I think we kind of already are trying to get technology to address and fulfill that, just in many small ways and without maybe thinking about it or framing the question quite that way. I think we use it to fulfill us in tiny ways every day. And whether it does or doesn't is, I think, up for debate.
And I found it interesting because we do not know how the technology works. We don't exactly know the coding behind it or what in our DNA the machine is analyzing. I found some of the recommendations and some of the prescriptions, you know, somewhat not comical, but just at wide different ends of the spectrum. And, you know, the one that immediately comes to mind is on the first page where the gentleman is told that he should eat more tangerines, he should move his desk to near a window with light, and he should have the tip of his index finger removed. But then there are others which suggest, you know, cut off all contact with your brother, or get a dog, or get more sleep. How was it writing? I mean, we don't know how it was coded. You are the author of the book. How was it writing some of these different absurd prescriptions for happiness?
Yeah, well, the one you mentioned first with the man in the opening chapter who is asked to sever the uppermost joint of his finger and eat tangerines and get a desk by the morning light, that was in there from the beginning. That is where I started the story. And well, looking back on it now, and I didn't have a real agenda or thesis statement going into the writing process. I had this premise about a woman who believed in a machine that could predict happiness, who had someone in her life who was fundamentally and from her perspective, inexplicably happy, and that's her son. And I just wanted to explore their story as honestly as possible. But looking back on it now, I guess we could say that the variety and mysteriousness and absurdity of some of the recommendations that the technology suggests, I think it could reflect how mysterious happiness is. Sometimes we know exactly what will make us happy. Lots of times it's a big lifelong mystery.
So the story is told in 10 different chapters through a chorus of characters and from a variety of perspectives. Pearl, who is the woman we meet in the beginning chapter, she works for Apricity as a contentment technician, passing along prescriptions from the machine. And her son, Rhett, who you have already mentioned, he has a self-imposed eating disorder because he doesn't believe he should be happy. Other characters are Pearl's ex-husband, Elliot, his new wife, Val, one of Pearl's co-workers, Carter, and a movie star named Calipax. How do you choose the perspective for each character? Was it easier to get into some characters' heads than others?
Yeah, it was easier to write some of the characters than others. As far as the question of choice, that part of it was a gift and unusually easy, though writing process is not always easy. The first chapter started out as what I thought was going to be a short story. And I got to the end of it and I thought, there's more to write. And I was handed the next perspective, which in my initial writing process was actually Pearl's boss, Carter. I wrote that chapter second. It comes in the book third. And then when I finished with that, I said, I thought we need to go back and hear a story from her son's, from Pearl's son, Rhett's perspective. And it sort of moved on from there. And each time I finished a chapter, I had a sense halfway through maybe writing the chapter where I wanted to go next and which character I wanted to focus on. It gave me a lot of latitude. I could jump around in time and, of course, in perspective. And what was fun about it, too, is that different characters had different sort of moods or shades to their story. So, for example, Pearl's ex-husband's new wife, her story is kind of a noir story. Her son's is sort of a boy detective story. And it was really fun to sort of play with those different genres. Characters' perspectives, you asked who was easier to connect with. I often get at characters through voice. And so the two first-person characters, that's Rhett, and then the new wife of the ex-husband, Val, I connected with those voices right away. The rest of the book is told in, I think I'm remembering this right, the rest of the book is told in third-person limited. So Pearl, the main character, was an easy one for me to connect with. She's my gender, she's about my age. The ex-husband, Elliot, was a little harder for me to get into. And I'm not sure why, but it took a little while for me to figure out his character and what he wanted and what his history was like and why he acted the way he did.
You know, we talked about how the novel is futuristic, set in 2035. What were some of the challenges or considerations you had to take when writing about 20 years from now versus what you would write about today?
Yeah, I think the big challenge is one of speculation and extrapolation. So looking at what the world is like today, in particular technology and culture, pop culture, and then imagining that forward 20 years. And I was pretty conservative with my extrapolation. There were things I changed or I imagined forward. The houses are all wired with a home management system, which, of course, we have the start of that now. Screens can project and unfold, screens being basically portable phones, cell phones. But I wanted the book to feel very relevant to now. So I didn't want to leap too far forward in the future. There's that joke, maybe you've seen the meme online. It's 2018, where's my jetpack, referring to, it's like Back to the Future 2. So I didn't want to leap too far forward with the technology, but I did want it to feel like a direction we could be heading in.
So the machine offers suggestions for happiness, and sometimes readings do not change. And sometimes, you know, if a person takes a reading again, like submits their DNA again, sometimes they change as a result of the subject taking action. So if a person follows the advice of the machine keeps producing new results based on the subject's action. So does the pursuit of happiness become never ending?
That's a great question. And, you know, one that, well, I don't want to say too much about the ending. I think there is a sort of answer that the characters come to, the two, the Pearl and Rhett, the two main characters, the mother and son. But, you know, I think a lot of things about what happiness is and how we get it are left for the reader to sit with and come to their own answer, which I think we each have to do when it comes to happiness and satisfaction. I think a thing I can say in response to that question, which is a great question, is that one thought that did occur to me, and like I said, I didn't come into the novel with any sort of thesis or statement I wanted to make about happiness. I just wanted to explore these characters grappling with it. But one thing I did start to think about is, if you do go after happiness directly, it does seem to elude you. I mean, it seems like something you can't grab and put your hands on, that it's a byproduct almost. You have to come at it sideways, just sort of glancing at it out of the corner of your eye, which is a bit like the writing process too, actually. If you come into it directly thinking like, I want to say X, Y, and Z, you probably won't convey that in a believable way. You have to kind of dance around it the whole time. And I hope you come up with something that speaks and resonates.
You know, when we meet Pearl, her job title is contentment technician, and people come to the machine to be happy. Is there a difference between being happy and being content?
I would say this is maybe one of the problems people run into when they pursue happiness, is that perhaps they're thinking of it as this state of beaming bliss, like walking around filled with joy and a smile on your face. I mean, I don't know how sustainable that is. Contentment itself can mean different things. I'm just thinking out loud now that you asked me this. Contentment itself can mean, I think, really different things to different people. For me, contentment is a kind of active state almost, where I would be curious and engaged in something, curious in my world and connected with my world, but actively working to maybe build something or solve a problem. For me, that's contentment, not, I think, the way we normally think about contentment, which is a sort of rest state or a state of being satisfied and fulfilled. Yeah, I'm not sure.
What do you imagine your Apricity report would say?
Yeah, I keep getting asked this, and I think I keep saying, I wrote an entire novel, so I didn't have to answer that question. Well, like I just said, I think it would, if it were a technology that worked, and I think that's an open question in the book too, I think it would lead me to curiosity and connection. More simply, my family and my dog and my friends make me really happy. My work makes me happy, my writing and my teaching. Maybe tell me to cut off my finger, though. I'm not sure.
Now, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about your writing and your teaching. So you've lived in Michigan, California, Texas, and Oregon, and now you're in Louisiana. But do you still teach in California?
I do. I still teach in San Francisco. I teach entirely online now. So I'm sure this is one of the things that influenced the idea for the book, though it wasn't a direct thought in my head, but just the fact that I am using technology all day in my work. I work through a screen. And it has that funny thing that technology, well, this particular technology today does, in which it allows me to connect with a lot of different people, with, you know, students and colleagues who are all over the world, all over the country and in other countries. But also I'm sitting alone in a room with a computer all day too. So I'm, at the same time, I'm very much solo, as well as being connected to dozens and dozens of other people.
What was the writing process like for this book? I mean, I know you said it started with a short story and then expanded from there. I'm kind of curious about how do you balance your writing life with your teaching life, with your life?
That's a big question, and one I'm constantly revisiting and reassessing. Well, the book took 2 years to write before my agent took it out to sell, to place. And then it was another year and a half after that of edits and getting ready, taking it to the printers, et cetera. I do my best writing in the morning. That's something I've heard from a lot of other writers, though I do know writers who write late at night. I find it when I write late at night, my writing gets very maudlin. I'm not sure why that is. But in the morning, I have more clarity. I think it has to do with just waking up from having slept, that my brain has kind of given itself this rinse of the day before. So I try to write in the morning because I'm on Central Time and my students are on West Coast time, most of them. This works out really well. I am awake well before they are, and I can get a few hours in before my teaching starts. And then my husband, he's a classical collaborative pianist. So he's in a creative field too, and he puts in a lot of hours at his discipline, at his work. And so we both do have time to work, and we understand that the other wants and needs that time to invest in their work. And then the tricky part is making sure we don't let the two types of work, the creative work and then the teaching work, because he's a teacher too, overshadow the rest of it, the living, which is, of course, what feeds and generates the creative work.
Your first two books were written for young adults, and Tell the Machine Goodnight is categorized as adult fiction. Were there any marked differences in writing for different audiences?
Mostly no. I think the big difference is that Tell the Machine Goodnight has a majority of adult characters. There are a few younger characters for whom I have great affection in the book, but it's mostly adults dealing with adult situations. My young adult books is just younger people dealing with situations in their lives. My first young adult novel, The Space Between Trees, wasn't written as a young adult novel. I wrote it as a novel, and it happened to place to be published as a young adult novel. But it was very important to me writing my young adult novels that I not fall into a trap of being too aware of that the readers were younger than I was. I didn't want to try to pretend to be a teenager, if that makes sense. I just wanted to remember that time in my life and capture it. I was very concerned about sort of condescending to the reader when I was writing YA, so I tried very hard not to do that. I tried to just write the book and have the characters be younger characters. I loved writing young adult novels. I guess as far as difference goes, it taught me a lot. One thing I felt like there needed to be an immediacy to the story. And I don't mean by that a zillion plot events had to be happening in the first chapter. Not at all, because I don't think younger readers demand that or require that. And I, in fact, think that can be kind of disconnecting. But I wanted to deliver the character and the situation right away and to keep the reader connected and engaged with that. I guess I'm just saying I wanted to deliver the story directly to them. And I felt like, though, again, I think young adult readers, and we have a lot of adults reading young adult novels, including myself, they're smart readers, they're subtle readers, but I think they're maybe less likely to stay around for pages and pages of prose games, beautiful lyrical prose, just look at the dance I can do because of my writing abilities. I think they really want to be connected to the story. And so that was a lesson I learned that I tried to take with me, I hope I did, into my novel for adults, into Tell the Machine Goodnight.
What do you hope readers will take away from this book?
Well, I guess as with any book I write and what I want from a book I read, an awareness of all the different ways there are to be a person, the kind of different experiences we have, but then through that, how we are all fundamentally human. I mean, that's huge, right? That's why people who love to read love reading. More specifically, you know, I've been thinking about how a lot of futuristic novels, science fiction novels, are warning novels, especially the dystopian ones. They're very important. They show us what we're doing now and the disaster that it may create further down the road. And I don't think my book fits under that heading. So I wouldn't say I want readers to be warned, but I would like them to maybe have an awareness of their relationship with technology. There's this great thing that, do you know the podcast Note to Self?
Yeah.
And I think I'm saying her name right, Manoush Samarodi. She says this great thing where she says our phones, our devices are like babies, where we carry them around all the time. We have to have them with us. And then they make all these noises that we then have to tend to. But that at the same time that the phones or the devices are babies, like we're the baby too, because we are looking at these little screens and we're asking it to soothe us with the likes on our social media posts or our, the updates, whatever. And so I think becoming a little more aware of that relationship. I'm not down on technology at all. I think technology is wonderful, has wonderful powers and possibilities. But I do think it's important that we examine how we're using it and how that affects us, especially when we're using it every few minutes of our entire day. And it becomes woven into our life in a way. And so I guess one other thing I'd want a reader to maybe think about is just becoming more aware of that relationship and that technology is a tool and that you're using that tool in a particular way. It shouldn't be using you.
That was Katie Williams, author of Tell the Machine Goodnight, which was published by Riverhead Books. You can discover new episodes of Marginalia at KMUW.org or subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Google Play, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoy it, please consider rating or reviewing it. Marginalia was produced at KMUW Wichita. Our engineers are Mark Statzer and Torin Anderson. Our editors are Luann Stevens and Haley Krausen. And I am the producer. This is Marginalia, and for KMUW, I'm Beth Golay.